Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
On December 14th, 2012, Scarlett Lewis experienced something that no parent ever should. She lost her son Jesse in an act of unimaginable violence. The day started just like any other, but when a gunman opened fire at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, Scarlett's life changed forever. But this story is not a story about a massacre. It is a story about love and survival. Following Jesse's death, Scarlett went on an unexpected journey inspired by a simple three-word message he had scrawled on a chalkboard in their home, Nurturing Healing Love, which is also the title of her new book, A Mother's Journey of Hope and Forgiveness. And we welcome Scarlett Lewis to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm curious as to at what point in just the numbness that you felt following that day, did you notice the chalkboard?
It was on one of our first journeys home. I was staying at my mother's house. We made a trip home. I think it was to get Jesse's clothes for his funeral. And I noticed that on my way out that Jesse had written Nurturing Healing Love on our kitchen chalkboard. I was astounded, and at the time his babysitter and her mother were living with us, and I called them down and I said, you know, did you guys see Jesse write this? And Marissa said no, JT said no, nobody had seen him write it, but it was, you know, right at the level of where his height and phonetically spelled, and in six-year-old handwriting, but the message was clear, nurturing, healing, love. And I knew immediately that was a message of comfort that he had left with some sort of spiritual knowing that he had, that he was not going to be here for much longer. And he left a message of comfort for his family and friends. And I also knew that it was a message of inspiration for the world, that's, you know, where we needed to move towards.
Here is a child who is a first grader, and you don't think of a child writing something like that, and certainly in that order.
Yeah, it is, and it is truly a miracle. And people ask me, you know, did you walk around saying nurturing, healing, love? And I didn't. You know, I was a single mom. In fact, I'm the only single mom of all the parents. And, you know, I had a full-time job and getting the boys off to school in the morning and coming home late and fixing them dinner. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of time to talk about that.
When you talk about the other parents, what kind of bonding took place? Because that is something that obviously you share that so few people would understand what you're going through.
Absolutely. Those other parents are like family to me now. They are my family. They, out of anyone else in the entire world, understand exactly what I've been through. And I love being in their presence. Even if we're not talking about it, we completely understand everything, you know, that where we're coming from, and it's so comforting. I think that I think God realized that I wouldn't have the strength to go through this alone, and I just feel so blessed to have them, tragically blessed. I wish that they hadn't suffered as I've had to suffer, but they are there, and I'm so thankful for them.
The grief of losing a child is unimaginable, and then to do it in such a bright spotlight. Do you look at that time as just a blur, or is it still very clear as to what was happening at every moment?
You know, I made a conscious decision in the very beginning that I wanted to be present during the whole experience. I knew that grieving was an incredibly spiritual process and a time when you're very close to your one that you had just lost. And I wanted to be present for that. the trauma got in the way of that, but I quickly tried to heal myself. I'm still experiencing trauma to some degree, but it is a process. But it was in the spotlight. However, that actually turned out to be a huge blessing because, you know, December 14th was the third worst mass shooting in America's history, but I say it was the greatest day of worldwide compassion the world has ever known. And I can say that because I was the recipient of it, as were the other families. I mean, the whole entire world came together in the true, authentic meaning of compassion that day. And compassion means feeling someone else's pain, but there's also an action component, and that is when you do something to ease another's suffering. And I mean, I'm still getting absolutely beautiful handmade gifts and beautiful cards. I call, you know, traditionally I think they're called sympathy cards. I call them love letters because they are so full of love. And to be held up by an entire world in prayer and in good thoughts is the most incredible blessing. And it has been so incredibly healing for me. And I hope that I can give back by making the world a more peaceful place by my work in the Jesse Lewis Choose Love Foundation and also providing healing and comfort through my book, Nurturing Healing Love.
When you think about the past year, I mean, obviously now there's the anniversary and there has been a great deal of political debate, and then there was the release of the report and the 9/11 tapes. Do you keep up with that, or do you try to shield yourself as much as possible from it?
You know, even before the tragedy, we do not have a TV. We read. And the only time I've ever, you know, looked up anything about what happened was the morning after when Jesse's dad sent me a link to the New York Post. And I wasn't even really aware at that point of the magnitude of the tragedy. And I remember wondering, why is Jesse eulogized on the cover of the New York Post? Like, that doesn't even make sense. And so I looked it up and I saw the headlines and it said, you know, what had happened. And I wasn't even fully aware. And that is the last time that I have looked up anything about the tragedy. Like I said, we don't have TV, and I feel like I'm living the tragedy. I don't need to read about it. Mm. And, you know, as far as, you know, everything that's going on, I'm being gentle with myself. I know that it takes me a while for things to sink in. I'm just trying to handle the reality that my 6-year-old son was brutally murdered in his first grade classroom. Like, that to me, even a year later, is such a fantastic concept. I can't wrap my hands around it. I know it's true, you know, but it sometimes still shocks me. And so reading, you know, the report that came out, the 911 calls, they don't change my reality. I try to just spread Jesse's message of nurturing, healing love, and make meaning out of my suffering and find joy when I can and be the best mom I can to JT.
Was there a degree of anger? You write about this in the book, but was there a degree of anger?
There was a degree of anger for both JT and I. I mean, JT had punched a hole in his wall, in his room, and I was right there with him. But I also knew that forgiveness was essential in healing and being able to move forward with all of my personal power intact. And so I knew early on that I needed to do that. We had this incredible experience where these orphan genocide survivors from Rwanda reached out to us. And these are, when they were kids, they had experienced something even worse than JT and I had, and they reached out live from Rwanda and told JT, and I was in the background, so I heard it as well, what they had experienced, and that forgiveness was such an incredibly huge part of their healing process, and they provided such a profound perspective for JT and I. If those orphan Rwandan genocide survivors whose entire families were murdered and they were left with nothing could forgive their neighbors who did that and continue to live side by side with them, then we absolutely had the capacity to forgive Adam Lanza. And we did. You know, it doesn't mean that I don't have flashes of deep anger, hinging on rage at times myself. You know, when the morning of Jesse's birthday, that was, I didn't anticipate that, but that was incredibly difficult. Mother's Day, Thanksgiving, this year-end event on Saturday that's coming up, Christmas, it's all very difficult, and it does provoke anger. And I don't always make the right choice to forgive, but very quickly I understand that when I am not in the forgiving mode, I don't feel good. I feel angry. I feel venomous. I feel a dark, heavy, lead weight on me of anger, and it doesn't feel good. And so I just take a deep breath and make the choice to forgive again. And it's an important thing that I've learned, that it's not a single thing that you do. It is a choice that you continuously make. So it's a process in your life. There are probably some things that you can forget with, you know, one fell swoop. This isn't one of them. So, I'm kind to myself. It's okay. It's okay to have flashes of anger, and, you know, you just forgive again and go on. And it's really the only way that I have found that I can go on and continue in my healing process and be happy.
I was struck in the book by, of course, you're going through this as a mom who has lost her son, but you're also going through this as a mom who has another son, JT. So not only do you have to navigate your path, but you also have to help navigate his. And the duality of that seems overwhelming, but also just so important. And I'm struck of how, you know, you get to a point where you even want to send him to school again.
Yeah, well, that was early on. I mean, I was traumatized, and so was JT. And then we have this underlying grief, and we're just kind of walking around, and I hadn't gone back to work, and JT was kind of, he'd been back to school a couple of times, but he'd wake up in the morning, and he'd say, I don't want to go. And who was I at that point? You know, I'm thinking in my mind, would I force him to go to school? Is school safe? You know, I had these thoughts in my mind. My God, what if I forced him to go to school today and he was killed? And, you know, so I know they're not totally rational thoughts, but I understand why I was thinking them. And I really wasn't able. I didn't have the fight in me anyway, you know. And I had this kind of apathy about him even going to school. So we kind of stewed for a little while like that, and it was actually after the Skyping event with the Rwandan orphan genocide survivors that it was after that call that he started looking outside of himself, as did I, and wanting to reach back to those people in love, as he said, and raise money for their colleges. And that night he wrote up a plan to fundraise for them, and he's actually started a website. It's called newtownhelpsrwanda.org, and he went to school the next day without me having to wake him up, without my urging, because I didn't have the strength for that, and he went to school consistently after that. So it was really when he started being in service to others, when he started looking beyond his own pain, that he began to heal and find his own strength to go on.
I was struck by the fact that they razed the school where the tragedy took place. That building no longer exists. But of course you can't take away the horror. I assume those three words are still on that chalkboard in your house.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Those words are enshrined in my house. My father very quickly put up a piece of plexiglass that was donated, actually, by Apex Glass, a local glass company. And he very lovingly put up this piece of plexiglass after long discussions and, you know, of how can we preserve this message. So it is still there. And everyone who comes in the house, I proudly walk them up to the message and show them this, because I think it's so profound to see it in real life.
And as far as the next step, it's just a matter of always knowing that healing will always go on, the nurturing will always go on, and the love will always go on.
Absolutely. Those words, those three words are so incredibly profound. When I first connected with Professor Chris Cook at Western Connecticut State University, he's the director of the Compassion and Creativity Center there, the second compassionate university in the country. And he is working on compassionate curriculum based on the five C's. And he came to the house and saw, and I showed him the board the first time we met. And he said, you know, wow, that's amazing. And he left. And unbeknownst to me, he went back to the university and he did some research. And he called me a few days later and he said, you know, when I saw that message, I knew that it was more profound than just a six-year-old writing those three words. And he said, I went back to the university, I researched, and I found that nurturing, healing, and love are in the definition of compassion across all cultures. And so it really is a profound writing. And I knew that initially anyway. I knew that Jesse's cognitive mind wouldn't have written something like that, as smart and as precious as he was. I knew that it came from a spiritual place. And that it was a message for us, but it was also something that he wanted me. And I feel a pushing and an urging by him to share it with the world.
Well, the book is Nurturing, Healing, Love, A Mother's Journey of Hope and Forgiveness. It's a beautiful book. It is published by Hay House. Scarlett Lewis, I thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Our thoughts and prayers are certainly with you at this difficult time and throughout all that you're going through. And I so appreciate you taking time to talk with us this morning.
Oh, thanks so much, Joe, for having me on. It's an honor and I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Scarlett Lewis, again, is the author of the new book, Nurturing, Healing, Love, A Mother's Journey of Hope and Forgiveness. It is published by Hay House. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.